Hello. This is the IGCSE English as a Second Language Paper 2 Listening Test, Winter 2009. This test is in three sections. You will hear three extracts and will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the beginning of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all three sections twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Section A. In this section, you will hear the college librarian giving a presentation on the new library facilities, which will be opening shortly. Listen and complete the notes. Write no more than three words and or a number for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Good afternoon. As many of you know, my name is Mrs. Yeo, and today I would like to give you some important information about the school library, which in the last 6 months has been completely transformed and will be opening again next term. Within the next few weeks, the college will have access to some fantastic facilities. The new library will be a multimedia resource centre, located over three floors and housing over 16,000 items, including the latest fiction and non-fiction titles, subject textbooks, a wide range of magazines, and an expanding DVD, video, and audio collection. There is a small reserve section and 17 networked computers, 8 of which will have internet access. The other 9 will have access to a variety of electronic materials. We will be introducing a new library membership system involving fingerprint identification, and I will be visiting each class before the end of term with more details. We also need you to get permission from your parents to use the system, and I will be distributing forms for them to sign and return to your class teachers. This new system is very useful, as you will no longer have to remember to bring a card with you each time you borrow something from the library. Next, borrowing. You will be able to borrow most things, although the books in the reserve section and certain computer software may not leave the library. The number of items you can borrow depends on the year you are in. Students in years 7 to 9 can borrow 2 items at a time. This rises to 4 items for years 10 and 11. Loan periods vary for different types of material. Books will be available for 3 weeks, and so will CDs, while DVDs will be for 1 week only. Now, the reserve section is for high-demand books, as well as dictionaries, atlases, encyclopedias, and other reference books. You will find it behind the main desk on the first floor. Please note that you will need to contact the librarian before entering this section. You can return books to the library issue desk, or, when the library is closed, Use the blue box located outside the deputy principal's office on the left. The new library will also have 3 photocopiers on the second floor. You will need to purchase copy cards from machines, and you can find these right next to the copiers. Change can be obtained from the information desk. Copies will cost 5p for A4 and 8p for A3. Please note that the copying of entire books is strictly forbidden. Most of the library rules are common sense. Eating and drinking are not allowed, and this includes chewing gum. Coats and bags must be left in the entrance and not brought into the library. You may, however, bring in pencil cases and files. Items of particular value may be left with the librarian for safekeeping. MP3 players, games consoles, and mobile phones may not be used. There will be a number of quiet areas throughout the library where quiet conversation is permitted, such as the IT and issue area. Silence must be observed anywhere in the gallery on the top floor, even during break time and lunch time. Computers may only be used for educational use at all times. Headphones for the audio equipment are available from the front desk. I forgot to mention fines for items returned late. 3-week loans will incur a charge of 10p per day, and for 7-day loans, it will be 25p. However, if the fine exceeds £3, you will be called in to discuss the matter with the secretary and will not be able to borrow further items. If items are damaged, a letter will be sent to your parents and your head of year to arrange a meeting to discuss further action. I will tell you about how to use the computers on your first class visit. And lastly, a word about laptops.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Good afternoon. As many of you know, my name is Mrs. Yeo, and today I would like to give you some important information about the school library, which in the last 6 months has been completely transformed and will be opening again next term. Within the next few weeks, the college will have access to some fantastic facilities. The new library will be a multimedia resource centre, located over 3 floors and housing over 16,000 items, including the latest fiction and non-fiction titles, subject textbooks, a wide range of magazines, and an expanding DVD, video, and audio collection. There is a small reserve section and 17 networked computers, 8 of which will have internet access. The other 9 will have access to a variety of electronic materials. We will be introducing a new library membership system involving fingerprint identification, and I will be visiting each class before the end of term with more details. We also need you to get permission from your parents to use the system, and I will be distributing forms for them to sign and return to your class teachers. This new system is very useful, as you will no longer have to remember to bring a card with you each time you borrow something from the library. Next, borrowing. You will be able to borrow most things, although the books in the reserve section and certain computer software may not leave the library. The number of items you can borrow depends on the year you are in. Students in years 7 to 9 can borrow 2 items at a time. This rises to 4 items for years 10 and 11. Loan periods vary for different types of material. Books will be available for 3 weeks, and so will CDs. while DVDs will be for 1 week only. Now, the reserve section is for high-demand books, as well as dictionaries, atlases, encyclopedias, and other reference books. You will find it behind the main desk on the first floor. Please note that you will need to contact the librarian before entering this section. You can return books to the library issue desk, or, when the library is closed, use the blue box located outside the deputy principal's office on the left. The new library will also have 3 photocopiers on the second floor. You will need to purchase copy cards from machines, and you can find these right next to the copiers. Change can be obtained from the information desk. Copies will cost 5p for A4 and 8p for A3. Please note that the copying of entire books is strictly forbidden. Most of the library rules are common sense. Eating and drinking are not allowed, and this includes chewing gum. Coats and bags must be left in the entrance and not brought into the library. You may, however, bring in pencil cases and files. Items of particular value may be left with the librarian for safekeeping. MP3 players, games consoles, and mobile phones may not be used. There will be a number of quiet areas throughout the library where quiet conversation is permitted, such as the IT and issue area. Silence must be observed anywhere in the gallery on the top floor, even during break time and lunch time. Computers may only be used for educational use at all times. Headphones for the audio equipment are available from the front desk. I forgot to mention fines for items returned late. 3-week loans will incur a charge of 10p per day, and for 7-day loans, it will be 25p. However, if the fine exceeds £3, you will be called in to discuss the matter with the secretary and will not be able to borrow further items. If items are damaged, a letter will be sent to your parents and your head of year to arrange a meeting to discuss further action. I will tell you about how to use the computers on your first class visit. And lastly, a word about laptops.
That's the end of Section A. Now turn to Section B. Section B. In this section, you will hear Mrs. Singh, the college nurse, being interviewed by a student for an article in next month's college magazine. Listen and answer the questions. Indicate your answer by marking the box. If you change your mind, put a line through the box and then indicate your new answer with a cross. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. thank you, Mrs. Singh, for letting me interview you.
That's all right. So, what would you like to know?
Could you start off by telling me what a normal day is like for you?
Well, there are days when all I do is deal with only a few pupils' aches and pains, but then there are others when I hardly seem to have time to sit down. Really, I never know what I'm going to face until it happens.
And what does your job involve?
My job is split between first aid for pupils who are sick or who've had an accident in college and pupils who need support or help with a problem they may have, whether it's personal, in college or at home. First aid for pupils usually fits into three categories. First aid administered and pupil goes back to class. First aid administered and pupil goes home. First aid administered and pupil goes to hospital.
So, what particular sorts of problems do students have?
Because of the size of the college, we have pupils who suffer from a range of illnesses, including diabetes, epilepsy, and asthma, to name but a few. And these people bring their own medication. I mainly have to treat pupils who get injuries such as breaks in PE classes. There are pupils who faint in science during dissections, and pupils who suffer from aches and pains and need a painkiller. The younger pupils sometimes get grazes in the playground and need a plaster, and students with braces sometimes need me to arrange an urgent dental appointment when something goes wrong. And then there are the major incidents that always make your heart pound, and you run that little bit faster to get there.
And where should someone go if they need treatment?
That's a good question to ask, as I've just moved into a brand new treatment room. I've moved from inside the science block to a more central location next to the dining room. So now I'm a bit closer to the playground, which is where most of the scrapes occur. If I'm not in my room when needed, you must go to the office and someone there will ring me immediately.
Could you tell me something about your family life?
I have three children, aged 19, 17 and 10. My husband is a teacher, and at one time four of us were here. My husband teaches at Middleton now, and my eldest has started her apprenticeship at the local restaurant. My son is in his last year and planning to go to university, and my youngest has a year to go before she joins the college. The older ones are going through the teenage problems that most people experience. I hope that my own life experiences help in dealing with the pupils' problems.
I'm sure they do. I was wondering, are there any things that have happened during your time here that stick in your mind?
There are so many stories that I could tell. One day, a parent of a Year 8 pupil phoned me to look after her daughter as she was very upset because her pet hamster had died that morning. I went to see the girl and was very sympathetic and hopefully said the right things. 2 hours later, the parent rang again to tell me that she had brought the hamster back to life by wrapping it in a warm blanket. I then had to go back and tell the girl that her hamster was alive again.
Oh, I bet she was shocked.
Yes, she could hardly believe it.
Any others?
Another time, I couldn't get hold of the parents of a pupil who was unwell. We agreed that he would stay under my care for the day. In the afternoon, the pupil decided to sleep. He was settled in one of the bedrooms and I carried on with my day, seeing to other pupils who were unwell. Just before the end of the school day, I was called over to the PE block to deal with a pupil who'd hurt his ankle. After dealing with that pupil, I called in to see a member of staff and settled down with a cup of coffee. It was only when I got a phone call at 4:30 that I realized that I had left the pupil asleep and he'd just been woken up by the cleaners. I couldn't believe what I'd done. He could have been there all night.
Well, he wouldn't have been late for school the next day.
Yes, well, there is that.
Are there any incidents involving teachers? The students would be interested to read about those.
The pupils' escapades might be daft, but nothing can compare with Mr. Roberts, who decided that demonstrating maths by running backwards at high speed into a classroom wall was a good idea. To the watching pupils' horror, he knocked himself out
and ended up spending a week in hospital while they assessed possible brain damage.
Yes, I remember that happened last year. And finally, is there anything else you would like to add?
Although I am not a teacher, I work very closely with the teaching staff or students' families to try to resolve the problems that they have. My hope is that students leave my room feeling better than when they came in, for whatever reason. When students have a problem or feel unwell, they always want someone from their family, such as mum or dad, to be there. I hope that in this college, I am the next best thing.
Thanks, Mrs. Singh. That's great. Now listen a second time and check your answers. Thank you, Mrs. Singh, for letting me interview you.
That's all right. So, what would you like to know?
Could you start off by telling me what a normal day is like for you?
Well, there are days when all I do is deal with only a few pupils' aches and pains, but then there are others when I hardly seem to have time to sit down. Really, I never know what I'm going to face until it happens.
And what does your job involve?
My job is split between first aid for pupils who are sick or who've had an accident in college and pupils who need support or help with a problem they may have, whether it's personal, in college or at home. First aid for pupils usually fits into three categories. First aid administered and pupil goes back to class. First aid administered and pupil goes home. First aid administered and pupil goes to hospital.
So, what particular sorts of problems do students have?
Because of the size of the college, we have pupils who suffer from a range of illnesses, including diabetes, epilepsy, and asthma, to name but a few. And these people bring their own medication. I mainly have to treat pupils who get injuries such as breaks in PE classes. There are pupils who faint in science during dissections, and pupils who suffer from aches and pains and need a painkiller. The younger pupils sometimes get grazes in the playground and need a plaster, and students with braces sometimes need me to arrange an urgent dental appointment when something goes wrong. And then there are the major incidents that always make your heart pound, and you run that little bit faster to get there.
And where should someone go if they need treatment?
That's a good question to ask, as I've just moved into a brand new treatment room. I've moved from inside the science block to a more central location next to the dining room. So now I'm a bit closer to the playground, which is where most of the scrapes occur. If I'm not in my room when needed, you must go to the office and someone there will ring me immediately.
Could you tell me something about your family life?
I have three children, aged 19, 17 and 10. My husband is a teacher, and at one time four of us were here. My husband teaches at Middleton now, and my eldest has started her apprenticeship at the local restaurant. My son is in his last year and planning to go to university, and my youngest has a year to go before she joins the college. The older ones are going through the teenage problems that most people experience. I hope that my own life experiences help in dealing with the pupils' problems.
I'm sure they do. I was wondering, are there any things that have happened during your time here that stick in your mind?
There are so many stories that I could tell. One day, a parent of a Year 8 pupil phoned me to look after her daughter as she was very upset because her pet hamster had died that morning. I went to see the girl and was very sympathetic and hopefully said the right things. 2 hours later, the parent rang again to tell me that she had brought the hamster back to life by wrapping it in a warm blanket. I then had to go back and tell the girl that her hamster was alive again.
Oh, I bet she was shocked.
Yes, she could hardly believe it.
Any others?
Another time, I couldn't get hold of the parents of a pupil who was unwell. We agreed that he would stay under my care for the day. In the afternoon, the pupil decided to sleep. He was settled in one of the bedrooms and I carried on with my day, seeing to other pupils who were unwell. Just before the end of the school day, I was called over to the PE block to deal with a pupil who'd hurt his ankle. After dealing with that pupil, I called in to see a member of staff and settled down with a cup of coffee. It was only when I got a phone call at 4:30 that I realized that I had left the pupil asleep and he'd just been woken up by the cleaners. I couldn't believe what I'd done. He could have been there all night.
Well, he wouldn't have been late for school the next day.
Yes, well, there is that.
Are there any incidents involving teachers? The students would be interested to read about those.
The pupils' escapades might be daft, but nothing can compare with Mr. Roberts, who decided that demonstrating maths by running backwards at high speed into a classroom wall was a good idea. To the watching pupils' horror, he knocked himself out and ended up spending a week in hospital while they assessed possible brain damage.
Yes, I remember that happened last year. And finally, is there anything else you would like to add?
Although I am not a teacher, I work very closely with the teaching staff or students' families to try to resolve the problems that they have. My hope is that students leave my room feeling better than when they came in, for whatever reason. When students have a problem or feel unwell, they always want someone from their family, such as mum or dad, to be there. I hope that in this college, I am the next best thing.
Thanks, Mrs. Singh. That's great.
That's the end of Section B. Now turn to Section C. Section C. In this section, you will hear part of a radio program about some of the threats to sea life around the coasts of Britain. Listen and complete the sentences. Write no more than three words for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
The United Kingdom is a country surrounded by seas. Our marine environment is home to up to half of the UK's wildlife, and yet less than 1% receives adequate attention. A significant number of threats to sea life exist today. These include overfishing, pollution from land, climate change, and drilling for oil and gas. Why have our seas been so neglected? One reason is that much of the wildlife and habitats that are being lost exist beneath the waves, and unlike most other wildlife, we don't get to see the extent to which they're being affected. Today, I want to look at just two of these threats to the sea, fishing and pollution. I will also examine one initiative which aims to protect marine wildlife. One serious threat to marine life and habitats is fishing. Improved fishing techniques from the 1930s onwards have enabled fish catches to rise threefold over that period. Let's look at how this has happened. In the 1930s, small fishing trawlers were used and fishermen would track flocks of seabirds to locate the big shoals of fish. By the 1950s, ships were equipped with sonar, and fish shoals could be found accurately. The 1960s saw the arrival of huge craft called factory ships, which were able to stay at sea for long periods and process the fish caught on board ship. These vessels could catch vastly more fish than ever before. In the 1970s, the size of the catch continued to grow with the introduction of huge nets fitted with Hoover pipes to suck up the fish. The consequence was that fish stocks began to fall dramatically, and by the 1980s, many fish, such as cod and haddock, were declared to be in danger. In the 1990s, as the size and quantity of the fish being caught became smaller, new techniques were needed, and deep-sea fishing was introduced. This uses nets and heavy steel cables, which the boats drag across the sea floor. New species, such as orange roughy, were caught and proved to be popular. However, these deep-water fish are at risk and are already in danger of being overfished because they have a slow growth rate. The size of the orange roughy catch, for example, has declined by between 73 and 76% since fishing of this species started 10 years ago. This species is already in danger of becoming extinct. Another threat to sea life is pollution. Shipping traffic in the seas around the UK is among the heaviest in the world, and accidents inevitably occur, resulting in oil spills. In the last 35 years, there have been three of the world's worst oil spills around British coasts. But it is the land that is the greatest source of pollution. Over 80% of the pollution found in the sea comes from here. Farms are a significant source. The pesticides used there are washed into rivers, which then flow into the sea. Another source is factories, and even our homes contribute to the problem. The huge quantities of chemicals reaching the sea from these sources have the potential to damage not only wildlife, but people too. In recent years, there have been disturbing incidents of poisonings after people have been swimming in the waters off several British coastal towns. Now that many of these threats facing our marine wildlife have been identified, a few marine protected areas are being established along the shores and throughout UK waters. These areas have been designed along the lines of nature reserves on land. They are areas where we try to encourage human activities that are in harmony with nature. These areas protect marine wildlife from the impacts of oil pollution, shipping, drilling for oil and gas, although this will require a great deal of coordination with all interested parties, and they also provide the marine wildlife with food, shelter, and breeding grounds. 50 of these areas are now being established, and it is hoped that this small start will motivate other initiatives. The other two major threats to sea life, climate change and drilling for oil and gas, will be the subject of next week's program.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
The United Kingdom is a country surrounded by seas. Our marine environment is home to up to half of the UK's wildlife, and yet less than 1% receives adequate attention. A significant number of threats to sea life exist today. These include overfishing, pollution from land, climate change, and drilling for oil and gas. Why have our seas been so neglected? One reason is that much of the wildlife and habitats that are being lost exist beneath the waves, and unlike most other wildlife, we don't get to see the extent to which they're being affected. Today, I want to look at just two of these threats to the sea, fishing and pollution. I will also examine one initiative which aims to protect marine wildlife. One serious threat to marine life and habitats is fishing. Improved fishing techniques from the 1930s onwards have enabled fish catches to rise threefold over that period, Let's look at how this has happened. In the 1930s, small fishing trawlers were used and fishermen would track flocks of seabirds to locate the big shoals of fish. By the 1950s, ships were equipped with sonar and fish shoals could be found accurately. The 1960s saw the arrival of huge craft called factory ships, which were able to stay at sea for long periods and process the fish caught on board ship. These vessels could catch vastly more fish than ever before. In the 1970s, the size of the catch continued to grow with the introduction of huge nets fitted with Hoover pipes to suck up the fish. The consequence was that fish stocks began to fall dramatically, and by the 1980s, many fish, such as cod and haddock, were declared to be in danger. In the 1990s, as the size and quantity of the fish being caught became smaller, new techniques were needed, and deep-sea fishing was introduced. This uses nets and heavy steel cables, which the boats drag across the sea floor. New species, such as orange roughy, were caught and proved to be popular. However, these deep water fish are at risk and are already in danger of being overfished because they have a slow growth rate. The size of the orange roughy catch, for example, has declined by between 73 and 76% since fishing of this species started 10 years ago. This species is already in danger of becoming extinct. Another threat to sea life is pollution. Shipping traffic in the seas around the UK is among the heaviest in the world, and accidents inevitably occur, resulting in oil spills. In the last 35 years, there have been 3 of the world's worst oil spills around British coasts. But it is the land that is the greatest source of pollution. Over 80% of the pollution found in the sea comes from here. Farms are a significant source. The pesticides used there are washed into rivers, which then flow into the sea. Another source is factories, and even our homes contribute to the problem. The huge quantities of chemicals reaching the sea from these sources have the potential to damage not only wildlife, but people too. In recent years, there have been disturbing incidents of poisonings after people have been swimming in the waters off several British coastal towns. Now that many of these threats facing our marine wildlife have been identified, a few marine protected areas are being established along the shores and throughout UK waters. These areas have been designed along the lines of nature reserves on land. They are areas where we try to encourage human activities that are in harmony with nature. These areas protect marine wildlife from the impacts of oil pollution, shipping, drilling for oil and gas, although this will require a great deal of coordination with all interested parties, and they also provide the marine wildlife with food, shelter, and breeding grounds. 50 of these areas are now being established, and it is hoped that this small start will motivate other initiatives. The other 2 major threats to sea life, climate change and drilling for oil and gas, will be the subject of next week's programme.
That's the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklets to be collected. Thank you and good luck.